Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers. Lose the wizard hat. And ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of the Flash Lost How Much Money? Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad, reminding you that palindrome spelled backwards is in fact Immordinalap. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you, yes you, can look rad today with great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or you're just weird, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. We are also brought to you by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the posted paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever. Pay a lot less than in-store prices. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. On a hot summer night, would you offer your support to the Geek Cave Podcast Extra Life team?
Will they play for 24 hours?
Yes.
Will it benefit Children's Miracle Network?
Yes.
Will the link be on the website, geekcavepodcast.com?
Yes.
Will I still be able to watch Geek Cave Live?
Yes.
Again, will I still be able to watch Geek Cave Live?
Yes.
Will there be prizes involved?
Yes.
And will it help the kids?
Yes.
Yes.
On a hot summer night, would you offer your support to the Geek Cave Podcast Extra Life team?
Yes.
I bet you say that to all the teams.
Yes!
So, I don't know who you have for your musical guest this time around, Justin. I had to call in quite a few favors with the Jim Steinman estate in order to get that. So, I didn't really have time to watch anything this month. How about you?
Oh, please welcome Ozzy Osbourne!
Pilot Party! Pilot Party!
Pilot Party!
That was delightful, Chad. Thank you, by the way.
I enjoyed that, yes.
Yes. Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? To quote the great philosopher Chewbacca,
that's fair.
The Book of Pure Evil has the ability to grant all those who possess it their deepest fantasy, but at a cost. As the name states, it's pure evil. And it turns the user evil as well. Searched for by many, found by none. That is, until Todd. I present to you Todd and the Book of Pure Evil. A Canadian offering. Our tale begins with the most heavy of heavy metal concerts. Todd and his band are rocking so hard, the drummer's arm flies off. Actually, Todd and his friend Curtis are auditioning for the school's Battle of the Bands, and they suck. Between Todd's daydreaming and mediocre skills and Curtis's prosthetic arm falling off, they are the only band to not make the cut. To add insult to injury, the school bully slash star quarterback slash guy dating the girl of Todd's dreams gets up and blows everyone away with his very generic love song.
Yeah.
Cut to the subplot where Jenny, the girl in question, is at the school counselor's office giving exposition that her father disappeared, and the only link is a picture of this weird book. The counselor, Mr. Murphy, is apathetic at best to the situation until he sees the picture. It's the Book of Pure Evil. Apparently, he and a mysterious hooded group have been searching for it for their own nefarious deeds. Todd also hears about the book from a bunch of stoners and goes in search of it. Thankfully for the plot, it's in a display case in the school.
Oh, that's convenient.
Getting the janitor to open the case, he takes the book and uses it to turn himself into a guitar god, the book becoming the guitar. Unfortunately, Todd becomes an evil jackass as opposed to his usual clueless jackass. The next day, he challenges the bully to a riff-off in the school cafeteria. Todd soundly defeats him and earns a spot in the Battle of the Bands that night. Curtis is kicked out of Todd's new band, and Jenny realizes the guitar is the book. At the show, Todd is rocking so hard the audience is in a trance and bleeding from their eyes. Curtis and Jenny pull the firearm, clearing the auditorium, and they confront Todd. Managing to get the guitar away from him, they set it on fire. It turns back into a book and flies away. Yes, the book flies away. Todd is no longer evil, but still pretty clueless. At the end, we see Mr. Murphy and the hooded group discuss how the book will find its way to whoever is in deep despair and in need of power, all the while cutting to the rest of the kids at the school. Credits. It's okay.
All right.
It's like Family Guy humor, but Canadian. The characters are stereotypes of high school students, and the adults are as uncaring as the kids. Honestly, this would have been better served as a Kids in the Hall skit. Hmm. The only real highlight is Jason Mewes from Jay and Silent Bob as the janitor.
Okay.
Now for my predictions. Clearly the book is going to make its way to each of the other kids, giving them their deepest desires, but corrupting them in the process. But in the end, friendship and love prevail as the kids fight off the book's evil. Nah, I'm just kidding. As the show goes on, the book's power grows until it's able to turn everyone into the school into an undead army. Enter the principal, Mr. Ash Williams. With his chainsaw for a hand and a baseball bat he calls the Board of Education, he cleans house. Sure, the student body is decimated, but on the bright side, they were able to cut back on school lunches, thus balancing the budget. I give it 2.5 jocks bleeding from their butts out of 5.
Thank you, Justin.
You're welcome.
Huh. 2.5 jocks bleeding out their butts.
So is that like maybe like just a little trickle for the third one?
I guess. Mm. I mean, we're just...
Oh, no, they're bleeding profusely, but there's only 2.5 of them.
So it's just the lower half of the third jock.
Yeah.
Yeah, the butt.
Because otherwise, just the butt. You need a butt, you know.
Yeah.
It's...
yeah.
All right. Well, like that, there are a lot of shows that live out there in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some are relegated to the dustbins of history. This segment of the show asked you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it? Good then, the original's as good now. Reboot it, the idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it. What are these characters doing after a couple of decades of growth and development? Or refuse it. Another one of these, and you'll have to eat Grandma's tuna jello salad.
Blah.
Continuing our trend of anthropomorphic animal hero teams, this month we have the ground level heroics of Ripster, Jab, Streaks, and Big Slamu. Four brothers that were transformed by the villainous Dr. Paradigm into the hero team, the Street Sharks.
Oh, God, yes.
Filled with all the cool nouveau slang that you can imagine and the repeated exclamation of, Jawsome. Street Sharks lasted a stunning 3 seasons, comprising 40 episodes in total. In the inaugural episode, which is the one I watched.
Well, of course.
Right. Dr. Paradigm decides to use Dr. Bolton's gene-smashing technology for evil. He's got an eye patch. It's gonna happen.
That's how you tell.
Yeah.
And he turns Dr. Bolton into an unseen monstrosity before kidnapping Bolton's 4 sons and then ensharkening them.
Ensharkening.
Yep. That first episode is notable for the 4 teens being super chill about turning into sharks, and then demonstrating a willingness to eat literally anything that they can get their jaws on. Hot dog cart, some cars, a billboard, totem poles, you know, stuff. Also, they can apparently swim through the ground with their dorsal fins breaking through the streets in a way that I'm most certain won't cause any lasting damage. That first episode ends with the street sharks being captured by the government a la ALF. I don't have anything else to say about this, but what about you guys? Review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
While you were talking, I texted your grandmother for that recipe. It's a hard refuse from me, and I hope you're hungry.
There is no world in which I ever want to see this show again. It has been awash in the shores of my ignorance because I forgot about it until you started to bring it up. There's a reason Jossum didn't catch on.
Well, it's no Cowabunga, that's for sure.
It's just it's a lazy clone made in a cynical time. No, there's no.
Just no, huh?
Throw it back.
Throw it back. Let it get bigger. Well, sure. Pay attention, yeah, because we're going to revisit it a little bit next month.
Oh, God.
But no spoilers. Oh, no. Trailer Park Roundup. Man, there were not a lot of trailers out. The Nun 2. Hey, did you like The Conjuring? What about The Conjuring 2 or the spinoffs? You know, Annabelle or The Nun? Well, here's the 9th movie in the Conjuring movie universe.
Oh, wow.
All set to creep you out and keep you up at night. Blue Beetle. You know, this reboot of Shazam is looking really interesting.
I wish I cared. I really, because I like Jaime Reyes. I like the Blue Beetle. I like the gimmick. I just can't make myself care.
Well, considering that we don't know what's going to happen with it.
Yeah.
And it really is just Shazam.
Yeah.
You know, kid gets superpowers, super supportive family, and some weird bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eh. Wonka. So I didn't think that there was anything that could make me want to see Tim Burton's take on Willy Wonka again. And yet here we are.
I saw something online where they compared the outfit that Wonka is wearing to the outfit Gonzo was wearing in A Muppet Christmas Carol, and it is almost exactly the same.
Huh.
Gonzo wore it better, by the way.
I was about to say, should we do a who wore it better, or?
Yeah, Gonzo.
Okay.
Retribution. You know, Liam Neeson's starting to get a little bit typecast in these movies. I mean, sure, it looks exciting, but so did Speed 2. Five Nights at Freddy's. Will it be as good as, better than, or worse than the video game that it's based on? Someone else, let me know. Godzilla Minus One. Well, now we know what Justin will be doing on December 1st.
I know!
And Corner Office. John Hamm doing St. Louis proud by being in a trailer that has me the most excited so far.
Hmm. All right.
Godzilla Minus One looks fun.
I know.
But I didn't see that one until like today. So anyway.
Yeah.
Like I said, not a lot of trailers. I probably could have found a whole lot more, but yeah.
Did you see the trailer for The Outlaws?
I did not.
It is a comedy starring Pierce Brosnan, Adam Devine, and Ellen Barkin.
Oh, I did see that one. I didn't remember whether or not I reviewed it last month or not.
If he did, I don't know. But the highlight of the trailer is, so Adam Devine is trying to impress his girlfriend's parents, Pierce Brosnan and Ellen Barkin, who are bank robbers or thieves or whatever. I wasn't paying too close attention. But at one point, Adam Devine comes down the stairs in a suit and Ellen Barkin goes, "Oh, he looks like James Bond," to which Pierce Brosnan goes, "Which one?" Number 5. "Oh, I like him," because he was the 5th James Bond. That's the highlight of the trailer. You're not missing anything. I just told you.
That is a great inside joke.
It is.
I'm a fan.
That made me guffaw after that. Meh.
So we're not really doing news.
No.
But I do keep up with the geekcavepodcast.com for those kind of things.
As you should.
I saw an article on there that said that Superman Legacy now has Guy Gardner, has Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner.
Yep.
The least favorite Green Lantern of all of them.
I love the casting, though.
Oh, yeah.
So Superman Legacy now has Guy Gardner, has Hawk Girl, Mr. Terrific, and Metamorpho. So wrong answers only. Who else will join before the movie's finished?
George Clooney's Batman.
I mean, the easy answer is Stan Lee, but I want to get a little creative with this one. So I'm going to say Vin Diesel as the guy he plays from The Fast and the Furious. No, Vin Diesel as the pacifier.
Look
that one up.
Yep, I know that one.
Ooh, Vin Diesel as Booster Gold.
Ooh.
You know, that would work.
I mean, kind of.
Kind of. You need to give him hair.
Nope.
No.
No.
Elmo. Elmo as Super Grover.
Geralt of Rivia.
Hey, no. No.
Geralt of Rivia.
It's wrong Rivia. Answers only. This is a safe space.
Don't you mess with Super Grover.
You know what I really want? Dog Welder. Justin told us about that, you know, a year or so ago.
Yeah.
The most powerful superhero.
Yeah.
Can weld the dog star.
I kind of want to see, like, Hugh Jackman's Wolverine show up. The yellow and blue and everything, you know.
I did see that picture.
Yep. At DKPodcast.com. Yeah.
I did at DKPodcast.com. Oh, those are fun. I wonder when we'll get a Lobo in a movie.
Oh, I know they were talking about it, but yeah, that was before everything got scuttled.
We could have fun with a Lobo Superman thing.
We
Two
could.
Super charismatic, you know, kind of characters in there. It'd be fun. Well, I did watch a few movies. Nimona, short review, worth it.
Okay, I've seen trailers for that.
Funny, heartbreaking, a little predictable, but in a good way. Animation's a little jaggy in that anime action way where it makes things look faster. They did the same thing with the Into the Spider-Verse stuff.
Okay, yeah.
The Miles Morales, you know, where they, instead of giving you 24 frames, they give you like between 12 and 16.
They did that with Dragon Prince too.
Okay. I didn't see that far into Dragon Prince.
Yeah.
Anyway. Lots of jokes are meant for the adults, but won't get your kids asking too many questions. Great punchline at the end of the film. Overwhelmingly enjoyable. Solid A on that one.
Good. My son has been reading the graphic novels of that, so.
I have no idea how it stacks to the graphic novels, but the movie was a lot of fun.
Good.
My child said that there was a lot of sad parts, though. Is this a joke? Okay.
I don't know.
That's the name of this thing.
Oh, okay.
And all it is a bunch of acted out dirty jokes. No plot, no characters, no character development, just a bunch of adult jokes, nudity, and bad acting with worse camera work. If it weren't that it was funny, I'd fail it, but it gets a D.
Oh, okay.
Because there's at least a couple jokes that made me laugh.
That reminds me of a documentary I saw called The Aristocats. The Aristocrats, sorry.
Aristocats is a different documentary.
Yeah, no.
I think that's about greed in the underclass.
No, The Aristocrats. It's about the dirtiest joke ever told. But the thing is, it's never told the same way twice. And they interview a slew of comedians who give their own take on this joke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was worth watching once.
So it was Aristocats.
Yeah. So the 50 worst movies ever made is an hour long kind of film. Basically, it's a countdown listicle of terrible movies. So, but for someone like Justin or I, it comes out more as a checklist of things that we've watched and made fun of. The list, however, does include a stunning lack of Manos, The Hands of Fate. So,
what the heck?
Please tell me Samurai Cop is on that list.
No.
Okay.
Then I mean, it's not the 50 worst films.
No.
I mean,
I've seen Samurai Cop. I've seen Roller Gator. Oh, mm-hmm. my God. Both of those are so
I'm
bad.
Not saying it's definitive. I'm saying that this one...
It's wrong.
You know, it's a B. It's kind of funny.
Okay.
You know, it's mildly interesting.
Is it made by BuzzFeed?
Is it made by... I don't remember who it is. I saw it on Amazon or on Tubi. There was a question on Discord, right?
Yes, there was a question. And by the way, that's one of the reasons you should join our Discord. You can ask questions that we might answer during the tapings. I don't remember who asked this one, but one of our Discord users wants to know, what would it take for Chad to give a movie an F?
Are you ready for this one?
Oh, Lord.
The Sand. All right? Horror movie, The Sand. Did you ever watch Frogs and think, you know what, this acting is too high caliber? Did you watch Death of the Supermodels and think to yourself, you know what, the plot to this one's just a little bit too complex? Let me introduce you to The Sand, a movie in which a bunch of 20-something high school students, or maybe college, I don't know.
Who knows?
A bunch of beautiful people are having a party. There's a thing that happens. The next day they wake up drunk or hungover, and somebody steps out on the sand and gets stuck. They can't move. Can't move. Can't get up. Can't. Oh, my God. And then they get sucked under the sand and eaten.
Okay.
It's a giant jellyfish. Yeah, we're just going to jump right to the end of this. It's a giant jellyfish at the end of this. Avoid this movie. It's worse than I just tried to make it sound. I can't believe that I actually let it run on my phone for its entire runtime. But by that point, I'm just like, what the heck is the ending? Come on. What? Solid F.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. You know what? I am not trying to get you to watch it out of some morbid curiosity. No, there are much better bad movies that you can watch. All right? You can go watch Evil Dead 1. It's a bad movie. It's more enjoyable than this. You can watch the director's cut of Army of Darkness, which is not a great movie because they ruined the ending. And it's better than this.
How does it compare to Gaspar Noé's Love?
You know, I would rather watch that boring, unenthusiastic hand job scene from the beginning of Gaspar Noé's Love on a repeat for 90 minutes than to watch this one more time.
Oh, my gosh. Well, ladies and gentlemen, now we know.
I don't have anything else but the random movie review. Ooh. Are we ready for that?
Ooh, I got something.
You got something.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
So, recently on one of your You Want Me to Watch What's, you guys talked about Escape from New York.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that reminded me, the design of Metal Gear Solid main character Solid Snake is almost a direct copy of Snake Plissken from Escape from New York. And that's on purpose. In fact, Metal Gear creator Hideo Kojima has admitted as much because, quote, I just like Kurt Russell's character so much. Now, John Carpenter says the only reason Kojima did not get sued into oblivion was because, and I quote, he seems like a nice guy.
Also, Metal Gear Solid made more.
It did make more money. Yeah. That's all I got.
All right. Well,
by the by. You can buy The Sand on Amazon for $21.98.
Don't do it.
You can watch it on Tubi for free. Not that you should.
Not that you should.
But you can.
I just wanted to see what the price... And that's DVD, by the way, not Blu-ray. DVD.
Oh, thank Christ. Because, like, all we need is just higher definition. That would have made everything better. Gee, I should have watched this with HDR+.
You should have.
Man, that...
You're missing out.
I missed out on all of the colors of sand.
Do it again.
And corn syrup blood.
All right.
Kent, deliver me from this nonsense.
Oh, the lights are down low. Mmm, the popcorn is hot. Mmm, the drinks are cold. Ah, settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
The roll of the dice has the next movie I review being Operation Mincemeat. Guys, we found it. The movie that I can't be funny about.
Oh,
because
no.
I can't be.
Oh, no.
Unfortunately. See, Call Me By Your Name is one of those films that suffers a bit by its inability to really capture certain pieces of the book. This is not a romantic comedy. This is a romantic drama. You know, and before we get too far into it, I'll say the film was nominated for 4 Academy Awards. Best Picture, Best Actor from Timothy Chalamet, Best Original Song, and it won for Best Adapted Screenplay, which is the one category I would not have given it. Though, to be fair, some important changes were made that made the story work as a film than trying to do a stock retelling of the book. All right. The year is 1983. The place is Northern Italy. It's the perfect year, you see, because it saw the demise of the 70s, but it had yet to see the corruption of Reagan or Thatcher just yet. It's an innocent time, tongue in cheek, and Elio and his family are settling into their summer home waiting for Oliver. Oliver's a college student who will be working with Elio's dad through the summer as a research assistant. Elio is 17 years old. With all the usual trappings of that age, he's moody and broody. He's naive, but he has that worldly, weary way that thinks he isn't naive. And he's reaching that point in puberty in which his sexual development, both physically and mentally, has started becoming a hyper-focused aspect of his identity. All right? Oliver, on the other end, is 24 years old. Intelligent, aloof in that cool, charismatic kind of way, and fond of such American colloquialisms as saying later when leaving for a time. Though Elio and Oliver aren't enemies, there is a certain antagonism between them as Oliver's given Elio's bedroom to use for the summer. That's my room. Over the course of the film's length, the two of them will bond because Elio is given charge, basically, of showing Oliver around. You know, where's the bank? Where's the, you know, go to the beach, go to the, do the things. As the two of them bond, Elio's development becomes more of a fixation point. You know, Elio's development, the relationship there. So Elio has his first intimate experience in the course of this movie with one of the local girls. We're treated to all the usual awkwardness that that kind of relationship entails. But even this is just a setup for the real relationship of the movie, Elio and Oliver. The two of them eventually grow closer, and Elio's burgeoning feelings for Oliver eventually become explicit. Oliver reciprocates at first, then rejects, then reciprocates again, and the two eventually have themselves a bit of a whirlwind romance before the summer eventually ends, and Oliver must return home. And it's heartbreaking, you know, for Elio. Possibly the best scene in the movie is what follows shortly after Oliver has to go home and Elio's father talks to him about the nature of love and relationship, because this is 1983 and this is a homosexual relationship. But the overwhelming acceptance of his son, regardless of that sexual orientation, damn near had me in tears. Doesn't stop the heartache for Elio, but we get a sense he's going to be okay, right? Because right. He's got this good support system around him. The movie ends, we fast forward to the holiday time, because they're Jews. And I guess it's still Christmas time, but they're not setting up a Christmas tree.
Right.
Elio and Oliver speak on the phone, and Elio learns that Oliver's getting married to a woman, because his own father would not understand. 1983. And the movie ends with this long shot of Elio crying near the fire as a Sufjan Stevens song plays. So this is one of those movies that has no antagonist. You know, there's nobody who's being mean or cruel for cruelty's sake. The characters are played well. The enemy is time. You only have the summer. The summer is going to end. I don't know that I would watch this movie again. The ending's good. The sexual encounters are as awkward as you'd expect of a 17-year-old to have. The overall setup is fine. There's an intensely romantic and intimate movie in this. Also, some deeply uncomfortable parts, right? I think watching it too often would rob it of all of those things. So remember at the beginning when I said that it suffers from not keeping certain things from the book? What's missing is Elio's self-reflection. See, in the book, Elio is an eager participant in everything that's going on. He recognizes when he's being manipulated, and he's just kind of there for it. It's like, okay, let's see where this goes. I want to experience all of the things. I want to be here for this and let life take me. Right? The movie doesn't communicate that well enough. So there are times that it looks very much like a 24-year-old is exerting sexual power over a 17-year-old.
Ah.
And that's really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It does not help that at the time of filming, Timothée Chalamet was 21 and Armie Hammer was 34. So there is a big difference in bone structure and in all these things.
Yeah.
Now, the film is not depicting an abusive relationship, but it's really hard to separate what you're seeing when they're not giving that background of Elio's character really saying, I want to be part of this. They show him being the aggressor for a part of the relationship, but it's not nearly enough. You don't get enough of his inner monologue or inner mind to be able to say, I'm giving permission for this thing to happen, as opposed to just the awkward 17-year-old flirting and, you know, grab-assing. In the realm of descriptors for movies, Call Me By Your Name is a movie that should be watched, I think, with movie people. People who like, you know, kind of diving into camera shots and angles and colors and cinematography techniques, who long to see those really lengthy camera shots where you just let the camera play and see what's going to happen. It's a movie for movie people. It's good, but I'm going to say that it sits really precariously on the Be Like Me of movies. I'm really glad that I watched this a few weeks ago so that I had a couple weeks to really process it before talking about it.
Gotcha.
If you had asked me how it was right after I turned it off, I would have said, this is terrible and shouldn't be watched. Given a little bit of time to think, to process, to reflect, it's like, okay, I see what's going on here. I understand a little bit of what's going on. But it's not going to be a movie for everyone. This is not a movie to watch in a group. But you're going to have to be in just the right kind of movie frame of mind to say, yeah, I'm going to watch a romantic drama, about this relationship in 1983 that has a distinct power dynamic going on that they're not really referencing.
Right.
So I'm glad I saw it. I would not be glad to recommend it.
Okay.
Gotcha.
With no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shooter Source and Gamefly. Check out news and reviews not on the podcast on the website geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversations. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What in Week 3. Head on over to the YouTube channel. See Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. Don't forget to look for our Extra Life page. Donate, donate, donate. We're trying to help sick kids. Come on, folks. I stole a bunch of stuff from Meatloaf today. For Kent Harris, our Ric Flair. For Darren Wright, our Tully Blanchard. For Justin White, our Arn Anderson. I'm Chad Savage, our Ole Anderson. And this gag was just for Darren. Thanks for listening. And remember, everyone is a geek for something.